Hello and welcome to the 9th episode of Indie Complete from MonsterVine.com. My name is Kyle Haste, one of your 3 hosts. I'm here with Jamie Kortz.
Hello.
Hello.
And is it Francesca? Is it Spencer? Is it?
Francesca Embor?
What? It's MonsterVine.com reviews editor Spencer Legacy.
Oh, hi. Sorry to disappoint you guys, but it's me.
It's so good to hear your voice.
Like, we got one.
I know.
We got one. Yeah, you passed the application phase. Welcome, new Spencer.
I feel not complete.
Your vocalization is so on point, and just the characterization really nailed it. I would definitely play this indie game.
Everything scares me.
Some real great character work being done here.
But, you know, I got to be a true critic and say it's not quite on point, though.
It's tough to emulate the original, you know? It's like,
yeah.
It's like even when there are really good Christopher Walken impersonators, there's always just that little off thing about it.
But I think that's what really kicks the nostalgia. You know, if it felt perfect, you'd be like, this isn't nostalgia.
And when people are really good at it, you can truly appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Because then you see their appreciation of it.
Exactly.
Right. So good. So good.
Yeah. There's an art form to it.
I still miss him. But I guess the Spencer will do.
Not told how to accept praise in simulation.
That's okay. Thanks. Things seem to be operating normally.
Yeah, we're going by all parameters here.
Yeah, Francesca, on the other hand, was unfortunately busy with midterms. I believe she's a grad student. That seems legit. So
I believe she is.
Where's the proof?
Reports have told.
Yeah, sources say.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm on the scene.
Anonymous
she
sources.
She's a grad student.
Yeah. Just my assumptions based on anecdotal information. Anyway,
inside source.
For this month's episode of Indie Complete, we've jumped into Jamie.
Hive Swap for PC and Mac, released September 14th by What Pumpkin Studios.
Nice.
Do you remember?
Do I remember what?
Hive Swap released in September.
Excellent. This
we like to have fun here.
Yeah, I was about to say, Jamie.
We have fun. We're kind of wacky. Yeah.
Mondays, am I right, guys?
Yeah, as I hold this glass of what is this?
Don't talk to me.
Pinot Grigio.
Yeah. But anyway, so in Hive Swap, we jumped into the role of Joey Claire as her and her brother Jude's home is somewhat swamped with monsters. In our attempt to escape, we end up transplanted on the alien world of Alternia, perhaps the source of these monsters. More escaping is had in this colorful and funny point-and-click adventure's first act. But before we get too deep into Hive Swap, we're going to jump into our new and noteworthy segment. And just to kick that off, Jamie, you were excited about a game in particular involving sports, maybe like Scottish sources tell.
That's right. Cheese wheeling.
Good old cheese wheeling deluxe.
Yeah.
For the Wii. It's a little bit outdated, but you know, they finally got it out there.
How does that relate to Scotland?
I don't know. I think that's Welsh. Like isn't that Welsh? There.
Cheese wheeling?
Yeah, is that
cheese
Welsh wheeling. Or maybe it's
when you
Dutch?
Roll cheese down a hill and you chase it. It's really weird.
And that's Scottish.
Actually, you know what? I think it actually originates in like Wisconsin or something.
That's close. There's some consonants shared between those two.
I
places.
Think our Spencer missed a firmware.
Wherever
update.
They find a hill in Wisconsin, that's what they use.
So actually,
well, it's a game called Golf Story. Hmm. And it released for the Switch at the end of September, and it looks pretty great because it kind of captures.
Wait. Mm-hmm. Any trains?
Oh God, I hope so.
Oh,
I can only hope.
Sorry, you haven't played it yet.
I've seen some trailers. There is a hope. I'm not 100% sure yet, but
you know, if you add an N, trailers almost can spell train.
It's true.
Or trains.
I mean, if you think about it. Every car behind the main train is kind of a trailer.
This is true.
So, wow. You know, right in and of itself, the trailer does
perfect.
Have a little bit of train resemblance.
I was not
resemblance.
Made for this level of philosophical debate.
Oh, yeah. Last episode
we're
that you
all
missed,
train
Spencer.
Stuff.
What was the game? It was we were talking about new and noteworthy, a VR game that involved walking through a train.
Yeah, like a haunted train or something. Yeah.
Final Fantasy 15?
Yeah, no. That was the one.
No, Uncharted 2. No. Final Fantasy 6.
Yeah.
No.
Final Fantasy VII.
Train Simulator. Yeah. Oh, God, I can't remember. Yeah that's true.
Yeah. Any but Final Fantasy, really.
We started a lot of train jokes last episode.
You would have
enjoyed it, Spencer.
It got really out of hand.
No, it didn't.
Yeah, it never did.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, it was
anyway,
fun.
Golf Story.
So Golf Story, back on rails here, is essentially, it kind of captures a bit of the charm that I loved about the old Mario Golf games.
Yeah,
I'm Mario so Golf and Mario Tennis for Game Boy Color were some of the best games I've ever played.
Spencer, have you played
Not even a joke.
I love Mario Golf.
Yes, I still own a copy.
Did you play the Game Boy version?
I did.
Game Boy Color? Yes.
Okay.
Game Boy Color, the one where it was just called Golf.
Yeah, oh, no. This is the... Yeah, just... It was Mario Golf, but it was like an RPG.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it had RPG elements to it.
Do you still own a Game Boy?
There was an RPG one.
Do you still own a Game Boy? No, it's on DS, the 3DS eShop store.
Yeah, it is on there now, too.
You should check
that out. I have it. Yeah, I have both. Yeah. I have both games. The advanced versions... The advanced versions also were the RPG style, also fantastic.
Yeah.
But both the golf and the tennis games actually had RPG elements. So you would level your character as you go.
Was it Camelot or Hudson or somebody?
Camelot, yeah, because I remember Waluigi saying, Camelot! Because Mario Tennis was the first game to have Waluigi.
Right.
But, yeah.
Wait, it was?
Yeah, first featured Mario Tennis.
So that makes you why...
Exactly.
So that really legitimizes why Waluigi came about through tennis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned to love tennis through Mario. It's a little weird.
Waluigi.
Yeah, purely through Waluigi's spirit and his mustache.
Right. So you owned all those tennis rackets I saw growing up.
Exactly.
After?
Yeah. Post Mario. So basically, this captures a lot of that spirit. It's a golf RPG, like 2D style.
Came out in September.
Yeah, it came out in September. And
oh, you said
it,
that.
Yeah.
I was waiting for that.
Do you not remember?
Sorry, I got derailed there.
Back on these rails. So it's just, it looks super cool. I'm really hyped up to play it because it just looks amazing. It's currently like exclusive to Switch. I don't know if they have plans to release it on anything else, but that's just, it's awesome. It looks super, super cool. Really excited to play it.
Same art style, sort of format and whatnot?
Yeah, kind of same. Yeah, it's like that 2D style, like early, like... Then the physics look really cool for it. Like it has kind of that, like the ball has some weight to it, and it's kind of crazy how they make it with like sprite animation and stuff, and yet it still has this
feel physics.
Super cool. I'm really excited to try that out and see how it goes. But that's like my big one this month that I think I'm gonna dive into here.
Yeah,
for the Switch.
It's exciting that the Switch is like delivering indie games for us.
Yeah, we're actually seeing real indie games. Stardew Valley's on it now. Yeah.
I'm gonna get one soon, I believe.
I feel like, when that Mario bundle comes out this winter.
Snap.
I think it's November something that comes out with Odyssey, and it's like a red controller version of the system.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, that'll be cool. But, it's awesome. I'm actually also really excited to pick up my Switch again. It's been a while. I haven't played in a bit.
Sonic left you craving?
Yeah. Not for lack of trying. Like, I really liked Sonic as well. That game was super cool. It's just...
Oh, so good.
Also, one of my controllers stopped working, so I kind of was in a little rut for a while there.
Nintendo.
A left Joy-Con. Because the first gen systems had a bit of an issue, so the antenna was messed up. So it's all covered and everything. It's just got to be sent away, and you got to do that whole deal. It sucks.
No. But although Francesca is not here, she did have some recommendations for us to bring to new and noteworthy. And in particular... She had this to say, if you're into indie games and were on the internet last week, you probably noticed two awesome games were announced. And I did see one of these, so I guess I'm not into indie games or I'm not on the internet. I'm not sure which one it is. But Mortician's Tale, which is a like death-positive game, which is a new phrase for me, where you go through the kind of the day-to-day life of a mortician who works and kind of helps run a funeral home. So you interact with patrons?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Patron. I don't know what you would call somebody who goes to a funeral home. I guess this is a one-time thing. Well, maybe more than one-time thing. But
residents.
Yeah, I guess the visitors or
whatever
the word is. And then you're also like, you can see if you visit their page, if you just search A Mortician's Tale and add in Laundry Bear Games, that's one of the developers along with Junk Latch. You can check out a trailer. It looks pretty nice. It looks like it was like maybe made in Unity sort of game, and it's like a isometric 3D view. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
It's like a three-quarter view from above.
2.5D.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's full 3D.
It's full 3D.
Yeah, it's just no camera movement. Or at least not like...
It looks super cool, actually.
It does look neat, and it reminded me a lot of... Because there's different sequences to the game, not just walking around and clicking on stuff, but... You know, in Trauma Center and Trauma Team, where you're kind of like working on people. It's like that, but you know, mortician style.
The funny thing is popped into my head was Funeral Mama.
That seems kind
of
got
a bit of a cooking mama vibe, you know, putting stuff in the right sequence.
A bit more gray.
Putting people in the
dark purple.
Yeah.
You literally do that.
Through the grinder. Yeah, you do all that stuff.
This reminds kind of the bones and grinder reminds me of Little Nightmares. You know when you're making those sausages?
Yeah.
What do you throw in there? Like chunks of meat?
Yeah.
That was a lot more wholesome than I remember.
Yeah, this feels more wholesome.
I don't remember.
I don't remember.
I can't sing either. So that one looks interesting. And I'm not sure on the release date on that one. But on this other one is coming in 2019, which we were both like, aw. But it seems like it's so rare that nowadays that people set a kind of realistic release date. Or more to the AAA front, they work in games in super secret forever. And then a year before release, they announced it, which is kind of nice.
By the way, in 3 months, new Nintendo first, like when they do that, it's like, what? There's a new Mario game in 3 months? What?
Yeah. So but
there's also the Square Enix route where you announce it 6 years early.
Yeah. Which I think in the industry's experience, just to go on a tangent about this thing for a second, they're moving away from. And now they're more working on games in secret and then announcing them like a year or so beforehand. So that they can kind of do it Hollywood style and just kind of a very, you know, managed pre-release marketing plan, which kind of sucks for developers on the AAA front because, you know, they work in secrecy pretty much all the time. And at least for indie developers, I imagine these ones would probably be a bit more open about it. But the game we're referring to, before I get totally off track for listeners, is Boyfriend Dungeon. And it's by Kit Fox Games. And apparently they're amazing, according to Francesca. We'll have to take her word for it. And developers, they're developers of Moon Hunters. And they're Canadian. Ooh. But for that one, it's basically, think of Hyperlight Drifter dungeon crawler, you know, hacking your way through dungeons that are procedurally generated. But in this one, you're looking for and trying to save weapons, who then turn out to be handsome singles, and so you can then date your weapons and
collect those weapons turn out to be hot singles in your area.
Exactly. I can't think of a Tinder / train joke there, but there's somewhere
they aren't looking
and
the dinosaur. Why is there not a train based dating app yet?
I think, you know,
give it time
for the story arc of Indie Complete. I think that's where we'll land.
I'm gonna make an app called the Love Caboose.
The Love Caboose.
I like it. Next month.
Maybe just Caboose, but like with hearts for O's or something. You know?
Yeah. You're like, I'm imagining it's like, what was that Zelda game on DS? Spirit Tracks.
Octopus Boyfriend.
Spirit Tracks, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be like that. Find enemy trains and date them. This is getting terrible. Our show's canceled. But in the meantime, Boyfriend Dungeon looks pretty interesting, but it is announced for 2019. But the art kind of reminds me of, at least the part of the singles and the swords transforming into them, of Dream Daddy.
Dream Daddy.
Which, of course, Dream Daddy didn't come up with its gameplay style. It comes from a big library of, or back history of dating games.
Wait, people dated before Dream Daddy came out?
Yeah, no, it's actually a concept that Dream Daddy pioneered themselves. This whole species breeding to extend the species and also
it broke
enjoy
through
it.
So many barriers that nobody remembers any previous.
Yeah, it actually will go down in genres. The most remarkable development since Darwin, really. Yeah. And we don't even know what Darwin was talking about until Dream Daddy came out.
Yeah, really helped us get there.
It really interpreted it in a way that we hadn't yet.
So. We are all made of daddy stuff.
Oh my.
Man, you can tell how much Francesca keeps us on the rails when
she's here. It's bad. I mean, it doesn't help that we keep doing train puns, whether or not we can help it.
she kept that in line. Anyway, so that one looks very promising, and I'm excited to look into it some more. I thought I would hate Dream Daddy, but I forgot to mention on the podcast, I did play that this summer, and it was actually really, really great. I definitely highly recommend it. So
I was kind of skeptical about it.
I was too, because I don't watch her get into Game Grumps at all. It looks kind of not my thing. But they were involved with this game. I don't think they were the writers, but they worked with people on it and whatnot. So I don't know their full credit on it, but they helped bring it to life. And kudos for that, because it's actually surprisingly good and like well thought out. So that's kind of turned me on to these games. So I'm interested in Boyfriend Dungeon in 2019. So Spencer... There's been a game that Jamie's been excited about. I know that's very rare, but he's been talking about it from episode to episode. I think it's involving cups or beverages Mario Odyssey. Or something. Yeah.
There's a train level, which is what I'm really the most excited about.
Okay.
There is. It's true.
Wait.
And there's a ghost train. Yeah.
In
it is.
Cuphead?
It's very spooky.
Yeah. Oh, snap. Yeah. Oh, well, in that case, you have a license. Spencer, you did a review for Monstervine this month. Can you please tell us a bit more about Cuphead?
That's true. I played Cuphead.
That's right.
Cuphead, but that's just a theory.
Yeah. I don't know how many people out there know this one or have even touched it, but Cuphead.
It's kind of obscure.
Yeah, it's a little out there.
Guys, we're not funny.
Only
we're...
like a million plus of you have heard of it, according to sales figures.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Only 90s kids will get this one.
Oh, Jesus.
Only 30s kids will get Cuphead.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Kind of true.
So other than what we can tell from trailers, how was it?
It's a great slam and then some. That's a little quote from it for everybody. Cut and print.
Box quote.
Box quote.
Spencer
done.
Quoting the game itself.
Quoting it and then putting it on the box. You're welcome.
It's like in double quotes.
We didn't have room for the developer name. It just says Spencer's box quote.
It just says great slam and then some quote. Spencer Monstervine quote.
Spencer
Cuphead,
reading
Studio
from
MKHR.
The other box, our prototype.
Quote, Wayne Gretzky.
Quote Wayne Gretzky. Quote Michael Scott. But I've been playing a ton of Cuphead. I love it so much. I really like my games challenging. So Cuphead's a really
Can you paint
nice
a picture
niche.
For us? I know we've done a few episodes, but real briefly, side-scrolling, yes. Like, bullet hell, sort of?
Kinda. There's a couple run-and-gun levels, but it's mostly boss rush, so you'll be facing a boss, either Cuphead or Mugman, and it's all animated, like 30s cartoons from Fleischer Studios and the old Disney stuff.
Did it meet the hype in that regard?
Yes. In my opinion. Yes.
And how about the story?
The story, well, it's very much just like a 30s cartoon story where it's like, oh, two very innocent characters are gambling and now Satan owns them. And you're like, all right. Woof, that got heavy.
Boy, howdy.
Whew,
boy, howdy.
And never gamble, kids. But so basically,
still gonna
devil's
gamble.
Got your souls. So you got to go collect soul contracts from all these wild and wacky designs. And then, spoilers, you might have to fight the devil himself. I don't know.
Ooh,
that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. It might be
Why would you have
spoiler.
To fight the character that screwed you?
Yeah, you have to kill whoever you are.
Can you take us through any memorable moments from the game?
Every single boss fight, essentially.
Pick one.
What would my favorite be? There's a couple, because basically, outside of run and gun, boss stages are either... where you're like standing and jumping on platforms and shooting, or there's plane levels where it's like more bullet hell like. My favorite bullet hell one would be the genie, because he's orange and he's really funny, and like the way the phases of that fight are really interesting. The other best boss fight, in my opinion, would probably be with the mouse in a can tank thing.
What happens when you beat a boss?
Yeah. Oh, when you beat a boss, it depends on the boss, but like different things happen to each. So like when you beat the mouse, a cat comes from behind the wall and like grabs it. When you beat like the bird boss, it becomes like a nice like cooked chicken.
But is it like level complete and then you like just move along a map to the next level?
Yeah, essentially. So like you beat it's like an open map, overworld kind of thing, like Mario World, except free movement. It's separated into like three aisles and then a final area, like islands. You can go to any boss in any order, pretty much. There's a couple that are kind of blocked off that you have to beat levels, but it's pretty open. You do it in your own order. You beat them, you get a flag there, depending on what rank you get, because you're scored. It's either a red or a gold flag. And then as you make your way through, basically you just like open up new areas. Sometimes there's like hidden coins and stuff to buy new shots, new upgrades. But essentially, it's just crazy boss rush bullet hell with some customizable skills and gorgeous visuals and designs and really tight gameplay. And I love it so much. I have the vinyl toys pre-ordered.
Oh, snap.
I have the mug from EB Games because I used to work there, so they offered me one and I said yeah.
Oh, nice.
I love it a whole lot. I'm playing through it on expert now, which is way harder, but I'm really enjoying it.
Is that like crushing mode?
Yeah, it's like new boss patterns and stuff, and it's really tough, but I'm really loving it. So
nice, that's good to hear.
Yeah, I recommend it, and it's only like $21.99 Canadian.
Yeah, I gotta get it on that. I gotta get there.
Yeah.
And if people are like, oh, I don't have an Xbox and I don't know if my PC can run it. My PC is just like paperclips attached to like a very poor processor. So you, if mine can run it,
yeah,
yours can run it too.
If I can run it on my hot Garbo.
Yeah, when I saw
you can run it on a TI-84, you can run it.
Yeah, when I saw that you were the one that wrote the review, I was like, oh snap, Spencer could play it. That's amazing.
Right? I thought I'd never be able to play it. And then I checked
Spencer
like
get an Xbox One?
Yeah, I checked the website, like the I checked the specs because someone was like, it's not that bad, and I could perfectly run it, and I've never felt that way before. I was like, what?
Dang.
A PC game I can play that isn't TF2? Shocking.
Shocking.
I mean, to be fair, TF2 is all you really need to play on PC.
That is true. But yeah, so I've had a ton of fun with that. Highly recommend anyone who likes challenging games or really nice looking games and is willing to give it a shot. Should check it out.
It's a delightful surprise.
A Monstervine 4.5 out of 5.
Ooh.
Oh, snap. What was the 0.5 lacking?
I think the run and gun levels kind of drag and they're less fun, but they're still much better than most things. So, yeah, compared to the boss fights, I don't like the run and gun as much.
Gotcha. And for throw this out there for listeners, if you have any suggestions for us to check out in games or to talk about new noteworthy or just enjoy
keep
in general.
Yourselves.
Yeah, please just don't tell us. Please, we're not interested. But in the off chance we are, please let us know on our Twitter, which is at IndieComplete or at Monstervine. And of course, you can find us at monstervine.com. Just look for the IndieComplete posts. So moving on to our main game for the episode, Hive Swap. So in Hive Swap, the game opens and is surprisingly to the point for a point and click. Well, not for a point and click, just... It's nice.
It's very to the point.
Yeah.
And click.
And click.
Ha. Anyway, since this is my last show,
we have
show
so
before
much
fired,
fun here.
The game opens and we see not our big sister, but we see big sister Joey and little brother Jude playing with her dog in a leafy yard when a huge serpenty, centipede-y dark monster springs from the bushes. It's got like really animated music. We'll probably play it right now as well. Jude is chased up the ladder to their tree fort. The dog takes refuge in the doghouse and Joey makes off to the sprawling brick house, bursting through the doors, and the house itself is sprawling with stuff, the prizes and trinkets of many adventures, it seems. And the monster bursts through the doors behind Joey, chasing her up into her room through the messy hallways. Joey slips into her room, closing the door behind her, and we, the player, take control, in true point-and-click style, allowing us to move around in the hand-drawn 2D world, check out objects, take some along with us, and use them together to figure our way through many tricky situations, the first being... how do we communicate with our brother and get to safety? So before we jump into our initial thoughts, I just want to give a little bit of background for anyone that didn't catch it last episode when we were previewing Hive Swap. But the game itself is set in 1994, somewhere in North America. I know that because Homestuck is kind of set in North America. And it's based on it's tied into the universe of Homestuck, which was a massively popular webcomic. I think it wrapped up in the last year or so. They kind of had long breaks at times, but the webcomic launched in 2009. It was published over many, many years since then, and it has an insanely huge following. If you've heard of people dressing up as like trolls with like candy corn colored horns and totally painted gray body paint, this is that story universe, Homestuck. And it's been so popular that they launched a Homestuck game Kickstarter, racked up a few million dollars, and created a Homestuck game. This game, Hive Swap. And we played Act 1 of Hive Swap, and there's three more acts that are planned to be released. So, Spencer, I'm curious, since I played this alongside Jamie, and kind of saw his reactions as we played, I'm curious, what was your initial impressions of Hive Swap? And may I preface, you're not familiar with Homestuck, is that correct?
I know literally nothing outside of what you mentioned. Like, I know what trolls look like from conventions and stuff. And
are you into point-and-click adventures at all?
I love point-and-click adventures.
Oh, so please tell.
They're my jam from when I was a young lad, and it's carried over to today.
A 90s kid, might you say?
Yeah. Because only 90s kids will get this game.
I like Hey Arnold, and I drank Tang. Yeah.
Oh, snap. So tell me.
I watched Doug.
Hey, she talks about reboot in this game, which I was like, yeah.
she talks about reboot and like weird Canadian PSAs from the 90s. It's very,
I missed that reference. PSA?
No, I was joking.
Did they mention like don't put it in your mouth or something?
No, that would be amazing, though. Yeah,
don't
that
you
would
put
be
it in your mouth.
I'd be into that. That
people
or like
that don't know what we're talking about. Yeah. Google that and click on ones that got like blue little puppets.
I'm Bert, and this is my brother Gert.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, please tell me your initial thoughts on HiveSwap.
I know essentially nothing. I kind of
just a broad stroke statement
in general.
I know nothing.
I'm still new to this world.
Yeah,
give me a break,
I'm
please.
Fresh
world.
Out of the hot vat I came from.
Oh, everything's cold and scary, but this game is surprisingly pleasant. See,
nice.
I know very little about Homestuck. Other than that, like Kyle's really into it. I remember that from a while ago. I recognized that this was from Homestuck just because the art style was similar. But I typically. The most impressive thing about this game is typically, if you listen to our Night in the Woods episode, like, quirky dialogue grinds on me a bit. But this game did, like, I didn't really mind how this one did it. Like, the way that Joey and Jude, mm-hmm. I think yep. I nailed that, talk to each other through, like, the walkie-talkie in, like, a kind of exaggerated way where they're, like, referencing weird events with each other.
Yeah,
I actually like found myself enjoying that a lot more than I do in most games and media that do that.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a like a trait of Andrew Hussey, who's the creator of Homestuck and I think mm-hmm. co-wrote HiveSwap. I can't put the words together to kind of describe his style, but for Homestuck itself, it was kind of it was charming, yes, but it was a webcomic that was kind of its presentation was based on the presentation of point and click adventures. So you'd mm-hmm. start on the first page and said, actually, I'll just load it up right here and quote it. So how Homestuck worked, it was basically on the first panel, it just says, a young man stands in his bedroom. It just so happens that today, the 13th of April, 2009, is this young man's birthday. Though it was 13 years ago, he was given life. Wait, what's 13 years before 2009? 96? Oh, so he was born 2 years after HiveSwap was based. So anyway, it just so happens that today, the 13th of April 2009, is this young man's birthday. Though it was 13 years ago he was given life, it is only today he will be given a name.
He's my age.
What will the name of this young man be? And in true hyperlink style, it just has a link saying enter name, but you can't actually type anything. So you click it on the page. This is Homestuck I'm quoting. And then it has an animated GIF of like one art panel that does animate his face scrunching, saying you're typing in, I think it says, Zoo Smell Poop Lord. And it says, try again, smartass. And he cringes. And then you just click again at the bottom of the page, the link in blue saying, try again. And then you write in, John Egbert, and then you smile in a GIF, and then you click again at the bottom of the page. It says examine room. So how this whole game is styled is as if you are participating in a point and click adventure, but all the things you're choosing to do are pre-written and you're just clicking a link to the bottom page to take you to the next one. I believe when they started this, they actually would let you write in your suggestion for the next panel, and then Andrew Hussey would work from those suggestions and create the comic that way. So these are actually based on the ridiculousness of its own audience. For a good period of the comic, it was based like that. And then they switched over because it got way too popular for that to be possible to continue to do that. So it gave him enough of a universe and uniqueness to build off of, though, so that they created quite a unique story. So I think his kind of witty style of writing based on second person, is that how you would say it? Your name is John. As was previously mentioned, it is your birthday. A number of cakes are scattered about your room. You have a variety of interests. You have a passion. This is about a totally different character, unrelated to HiveSwap, I should mention. But anyway, my point is the creation process of Homestuck and the fact that it's based on kind of a parodying point-and-click adventures really kind of influence its story massively and how it's connected with its own audience. And I think those traits carried over in how they wrote HiveSwap. So I think that helps explain
an actual like true to form.
Yeah.
And
so I also found myself hooked on Homestuck initially. And so when I was playing HiveSwap, I was really glad that they really captured the spirit just within the writing when they're writing about totally different things and just character banter. I don't know what it is about it, but I think that's part of it, what I was just going through there. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to hear that you enjoyed it too, Spencer.
Yeah, because that's like actually a pretty decent feat too, because like I'm very, it's there's a lot of dialogue styles that like I'm typically very neutral on. I'm like, oh, this is fine.
Yeah.
But it's a lot easier for there to be one that I'm not really into compared to like ones I really like. And typically the ones I'm not really into are like this kind of the kind of way it's written, but like more poorly. So like the problem I had with Night in the Woods and the Life is Strange and stuff, where I can't really get into that dialogue, but I was really impressed with how they did it here. And I don't know, it felt very like, how do I put it? Like charming, yeah, but it felt like it didn't feel like it was trying too hard. It was more like, it was very sure
of what it
was.
It was aware of itself, but also written well enough that it doesn't sound like it's aware of itself.
Yeah,
it
sounds genuine. It's aware of itself while still being something other than
just self-aware. Like they have talented writers.
Yeah, it's almost like there's content to it.
Yeah.
But I liked that a lot. I liked I particularly liked Jude over the walkie-talkie and his fixation with his birds.
Oh, the birds.
But only two of them that he likes.
Yeah, that didn't last.
That was pretty funny. We'll get to but that. I liked it a lot. Like I thought, like from like typical episode lengths of like Telltale and stuff, that once you go through the portal, I thought that was where it would end. And then it was like, you're like halfway done. I was like, cool. Mm-hmm. I got more to go. I like that. But so like, keep in mind, I don't know anything about the trolls or anything, but like the way that like they texted and stuff, I was really confused. So I kind of felt that the same way the main character did when she's like texting Xerox. That's what she calls him. What's his name? Zephyro
troll you happen to make communication Sephiroth. With Sephiroth.
Yeah. Sephiroth. So like when she's like, what is the X in all your texts? And he's like, oh, it's a horn. It's horns. That kind of thing. Like I like that part a lot because I was just as confused. But it was, I don't know. It was just very, I would like the main word I would use to describe the whole thing is charming. Like it feels like a 90s LucasArts kind of like adventure game where like the environments look like in the back compared to the characters, but not in like a cheap way. The humor was on point. The music was spectacular.
Yeah,
I will say.
And I think it helps that the whole comic that they've done for like, I don't know what year is it, 2017, they've done for like 8 years or whatever. Just checking my math on that. Yep. Okay. So it's their comic was based on the style of point and click. So it's only perfect that they made a point and click adventure game.
Yeah.
Based on the universe. Before I grab James' thoughts, I was curious. You mentioned point and click is your jam. How does it compare to other point and clicks from the past?
Since there's only like one episode out, it's tough to like altogether gauge. But yeah. I think it's totally like sufficient. It reminds me of stuff like Monkey Island, where it's like weird combinations of items.
Material, my source material.
Yeah. Like I love Monkey Island, Grim Fandango and stuff. So I really enjoyed it.
It does give you that like kind of quirky like level of, if you've played point and clicks, you kind of have that like mentality to what you're looking for when you're trying to combine stuff. You're like, let's throw dog food at this thing just to see what happens.
Think outside the box a little bit.
Yeah, like, it kind of gives you that quirky style. Yeah, it does a good job of it. I find it also does a good job of giving you a little challenge without it being overkill. I think it might have been a little bit on the easy side, but
yeah, I would say that as well.
Yeah. At the same time, there's nothing more frustrating than some really, really stupid puzzle where...
Yeah, I never finished The Secret of Monkey Island 2 because I got to the bottom of some ship and that skeleton pirate was there. And I was like, what the F do I do?
Yeah, nonsensical puzzle parts where you're like, seriously, this one little thing?
Before I could Google
this game does give you a good amount of hints. I feel like it's almost too much hinting, but it's not bad.
We were stumped a number of times, though, so it's not like dead simple, but
exactly.
It was like we just exhausted every option eventually.
And I find one of the best ones that actually did puzzles really well, where I got stumped, but not to the point where it was impossible, was Broken Age.
I haven't gone through that.
I never played Broken Age.
I actually never played part two yet. It's so bad. I had the Kickstarter backer for it and I was like, yeah, I got early access. Played the first part, got super hooked on it. I was like, oh, awesome. Oh, what's going to happen next? Wait for part two. And then I never got around to playing part two. But it was so cool. And I liked how it had like full voice acted characters. And they got a lot of cool people in there. Like Pendleton Ward did the voice of a character. Jack Black came in to do one of the voices.
Oh, damn.
Elijah Wood was the main character. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it had some really cool people doing it. It was really awesome. And I found that had just enough of a challenge to it where some of the puzzles got tough. Where it was like, holy crap, where do I go now? But it never got to the stage of like, I give up. And also because when I was playing it, it was pre-release because of the Kickstarter backing. So there was no like going online and finding the answer because I was kind of playing it fresh with everyone. So it was cool to be like, okay, no, you got to figure this out yourself.
I'm hoping in the successive acts, like this is the first act of four. I'm hoping they kind of build the player because there's a lot of people that are like really young. They got into Homestuck years ago and haven't necessarily like ever played a point and click. This might be their introduction to the whole genre, which is, I think, pretty legitimate to say since it's not a popular genre by and large.
Oh, it's dead now.
So
Telltale's the closest we've ever gotten to getting
it's
back.
Like
there.
We're kind of hitting this weird resurgence, like it's in a renaissance now, but it's strange because it's something that hasn't existed for like 15 years.
New ones on like one hand. So it's nice that they're getting into that genre as well and doing a good job of it.
No, it's cool to see it coming back again. It's a strange thing because it kind of gets that level of like, it's a game, but there's not really much of like a traditional game aspect, right? It's some puzzles, some logic and some things like that, but there's not much of an actual like, you know, traditional game sort of feel to it. So I think that's kind of what killed it off for a long time, right? People were like, well, that's not a real game. You're just clicking buttons.
Yeah, you're just like, it's a story where you're clicking continue.
Yeah, but it does add that little level of interest to it, and it does a good job of it, especially for something this new, like, where I went into it not knowing, like, Homestuck I never followed, so I went into it not knowing a thing, and it tells a really cool, interesting story on its own. The one thing, my one, like, point of contention was once you pass through the portal for the second part, it kind of got aggravating going through the text messages.
Yeah, you know what?
That got really long in the tooth for a while there, where I was like, okay, seriously, no, like, I get it. Like, you're burning through this thing of like, oh, he's constantly apologizing. Sorry, sorry, sorry. No, don't say sorry,
sorry
so
I'm
much.
Bleeding.
Okay, sorry, I'm bleeding. Doing so much. And it's like, sorry, sorry, sorry. Ha 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 ha. And I'm like, okay, guys, seriously, you don't have to fill up this
much. I think
much.
It's exemplified in that one point where he's like, oh, I'm bleeding to death. And he's like, huh, let's keep talking. I'm about to pass out. And he's like, huh. Sorry, I'm bleeding to death. Yeah. And it's just like four times. You're like,
yeah, exactly. When it comes back around multiple times, I'm like, okay, seriously though.
Yeah.
There was a few moments like that where I'm like, okay, this seems like it's really stretching text.
Yeah. But just to, well, I just mentioned my thoughts real quick. I really liked how we only played it for like 2 or 3 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was already liking pretty much each one of the characters, except for the character we were just referring to, whose nickname is Xerox, I think his actual name is.
Zephros,
yeah. He's constantly talking about his pal that is absent from Act 1. His name is Damek, I think. Was it Damek?
Damek.
You're like inside his hive. He sounds like a dick. Yeah. So we didn't see him, so I wouldn't count him as a character necessarily. He's like a background character. Mm. Everybody else I liked. But to jump into the story a bit more, from the beginning of the game, you've got these monsters invading their house. You got Joey, the big sister, Jude, the younger brother. Jude's in the treehouse. Joey's inside. We're left in this bedroom to figure out what to do next. And it's like beautifully drawn backgrounds that are really detailed, which is really a hallmark of Homestuck, just the attention to detail, and you can go up and zoom in on things and play with things. There's a what's it, Simon Says?
Yeah, button. There's the Simon game. And
if you can remember the room, was there
anything,
the light bright? Well, that wasn't out in the hallway.
Puppy surprise at the first
puppy
part.
Surprise. Yeah, you can interact with all these toys and things, and it tells you a lot of backstory if you're into that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think I was trying to. I played with Jamie, so we swapped the controller back and forth. Jamie would investigate everything, kind of like how you did in Tacoma. And me, I was like, speed run. And I was just like looking for keywords and like skipping through things. And I'm okay with that. That's my gameplay style. And like, if I want to go back and go through stuff, I will. Or if a keyword catches my interest. But otherwise, I'll just be like, they didn't mention anything about escaping. So skip, skip, skip. But I really, despite my style, I still really appreciate all the depth. Yeah. Like, if it wasn't there, I'd be like, oh, all this stuff.
I feel like there's a lot of backstory to do with the babysitter character that was kind of brief.
Yeah, what was up with that?
So that character is actually linked to Homestuck itself.
Yeah.
Her name's Rosie. Homestuck, God, this, I can't even explain what the story is. It's so big and so many acts and everything. But halfway through the main comic, there's this big event. And then it kind of time skips, I think, a bit to these other set of four characters. and Rosie's one of them. So I think she's the babysitter that's referred to in the game, the babysitter of Joey and Jude. So anyway, from the room, we've got to figure out how to communicate with Jude, and we find some batteries from poking around things. And in true point and click style, some things are from just poking around and having fun. So I was like, oh, I'm going to play with the Simon Says thing. It's just because I'm good at that, and I want to see how far I can get. And so you get three sets into the pattern of playing Simon Says on that. It's called Simon Says, right? Or Simon?
Just Simon.
So just Simon?
Yeah,
Simon. Okay, just so I don't get like copyright infringement.
It was just called Simon.
No, I mean, like, what is Simon Says? Oh. Is that this is a kid's game, right? Where, like, a verbal kid's game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it is, like, a property of any kind.
I can't even remember what the actual Simon Says is. I only know Simon.
It's like Simon Says, touch your toes, and then it's like, oh, I didn't say Simon Says.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You're like, okay, now do this.
Right. Gotcha. So anyway, you play this, and then it stops working, and the batteries pop out, and you put them in your walkie-talkie, and you communicate with your brother. And the whole idea is to get... Or he's obsessed with getting Joey to safety so they can, like, wait out the storm of these monsters. Mm-hmm. And you do so. And from there, can you take us through how you get to the attic? There's kind of a few steps along the way.
So there's a lot of puzzle stuff. I don't know if I want to, like, spoil, like, the elements of how to get there. But, you have to basically break through a couple puzzles to work your way up to getting, like, kind of little weapons and stuff. It makes little nods to classic RPGs as you go.
Yeah.
There's a couple little battles that you do where you're kind of figuring out
what
you're using.
Because you don't die in the battles necessarily.
Exactly.
If they keep hitting you, can't figure out what to do. But you're combining your items that you're picking up along the way, like somewhere like tap dancing shoes and the flashlight. And in one case, you're against a serpent thing, which has a ton of hands and, like, it's all just a dark... monster. You don't even fight it, you just got to figure out how to run past it. So you, like, do a tap dance and a twirl with your ballerina shoes and abscond.
So you get through that whole series of events to get to the attic and discover this device, this transportation device that takes you across.
There's lots of stuff you'll see throughout the house that are the collection of the kid's father, who's like an absent
Mummy
father.
Napoleon.
Yeah. So throughout the house is scattered all sorts of artifacts that are all really random but look like from far off places and brought home from these adventures. And to unlock the attic, you have to figure out this, like, spinning globe.
The house feels like the house in Jumanji.
Yeah.
It does feel like the Jumanji. Like, that's
a perfect... It straight up feels like the Jumanji house.
Yeah, that's a perfect
That's what it reminds
analogy.
Me of most.
And so through... which is perfect for point and click because there's so many varied items in that kind of house that you're picking up, you know, this and that. I think we picked up some pogs at one point, some hot spice that you used on a monster to make it freak out.
Yeah.
And Jude also has to, what's he get to you? Some marbles. So
yeah.
Spencer, you mentioned the pigeons. Can you just mention, spoil us a little bit about the pigeons, please?
So Jude has three carrier pigeons because he has to stay
up in his treehouse.
Up in his treehouse because there's no secure lines.
So No encryption.
Of his three pigeons... There's one that, I don't remember their names, but there's one that he loves, there's one that he's fairly neutral to, and there's one that he hates. And you end up using all three for certain reasons, and it's very entertaining to see how he reacts to what the three of them do.
It's Frohike, Langley, and Byers.
Yeah.
I don't think he likes Byers, because that was the dumb one.
Yeah, he's like, Byers is a waste of waste of existence.
Yeah.
Where he's like, oh, just the thought of Byers made him nauseous. but Byers saves the day. It's really funny because, like, it justifies him having them because he's, like, this conspiracy theorist kid.
Yeah.
But it's also just, like, there's no reason given for, like, his preferential treatment towards these pigeons.
Yeah.
So he just has this weird hierarchy in his mind. I don't know.
I love that on this, like, description page for the game, they just, like, list them as, like, Frohike, Jude's favorite pigeon, fragile, Langley, a coward, Byers, a good boy, a perfect boy.
Yeah, this is a Tumblr page we're looking at right
fantastic.
Now, so I don't know if that's from the game itself.
No, it's not, but it's great.
It's fitting.
Big ups to this Tumblr page.
Yeah. So,
rare things I never thought I'd say.
Yeah, I was like, whoa.
Yeah. I've got a few train tumblers, but anyway.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Oh. Like, well, maybe turn my life around here.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Back that thing up.
A little bit sexual in here.
So.
Bring me to the turnstile.
Yeah. I got nothing. So, anyway, so you make your way up to this big device that you've unlocked in the attic, and you're only going to the attic to get it to safety. But turns out, despite Jude's protests, you approach this drape-covered object. He's like, I don't know what's that. Don't touch it. And she's like, I'm going to touch it anyway. Because when she wants, she pushes over.
It's like, Jude. This is a plot device. What else am I supposed to do?
Exactly. So what she approaches it.
Look at it?
This big device opens, and it's this massive portal opens, and she gets sucked inside. And it appears she swapped places with some, like, alien, which is a Homestuck troll, for those that are familiar. Gray-skinned dude. I think he's got glasses on and, like, two sets of horns. These candy corn-looking sharp horns. And you swap places, and you land in Alternia. In what looks like kind of like a some sort of small like facility hangar area, you see the portal you've come out of. There's this like white dragon-y, lion-y, deer-y chimera monster. Well, not so monster.
It looks like a Patronus from Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I don't know. I don't know what this.
She affectionately refers to it as a deer cat the whole time.
Oh, perfect. And then I think something's between her, like it's a tractor between her and the deer cat thing. And there's a tablet on the ground, which you pick up, and you're like, first instinct is to be like, hey, where the heck am I? Who's this? And you are communicating with another troll person called...
Xerox.
Sephiroth.
Which, Jamie, you were kind of hinting at the conversations you were having with him earlier. What happens there?
So he basically thinks that because he's part of a resistance that's fighting against this monarchy that's ruling over them... which they kind of, that was the thing that got to me, is like, I get that eventually it's going to explain things, but it's like, they just seem to kind of drag that out a bit.
Yeah.
But, it was like, yeah, it's like, oh, like, yeah, did you get it done? Like, you got this done? Like, there's some sort of big uprising happening.
Yeah. You're kind of joining the middle of a story.
Exactly. So it's like, you pick up this tablet. This is the friend of this other character. Who
and he thinks you're,
he thinks you're that person.
Yeah.
And there's like all this back and forth of like, what's going on? Who are you? I don't know. Who are you? It's like, No, seriously, who are you?
I think it does work its way in. It was, like you mentioned, a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad for me, but it works in the world pretty decently, I think, without being like, so here's what's happening. And this is really boring to read because you were just told the facts, like a Wikipedia page. I hate it when stories do that, where it's just like,
let me just offload the backstory you need.
Yeah,
in
here's all the
sentences.
Plot, and then the stuff in between will just be like filler, and then here's more plot just told to the audience. I hate that so much. So this was nice that they just kind of like sprinkled it in as it was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But from there, why does he try to get to that house that you land in? Because he tries to get to you and covered in rubble.
Yeah, basically because there's these drones striking and kind of taking out this town that they're living in, and it's basically his like neighbor who lives across the street from him. And he basically realizes like, oh, you're an alien, I want to meet you, I want to see what you're all about. Also, you're gonna get killed if they find you, so we should probably sort that out.
Yeah,
so he basically tries to work his way across, gets smacked by some debris from a missile, and gets kind of pinned down in his front yard.
Yeah. So the rest of this is like the second part of the first act. It's you communicating with this guy who's trapped under rubble to make your way through Demek's house. Demek and Zephyros are best buddies, though it's kind of like a bully and friend relationship. Yeah. Sounds like Demek is, I keep forgetting his name.
Demek.
Yeah, Demek. Sounds like a dick. So,
because, he's like, how would you like it if I called you damn it? When he's referring to him as Xerox.
Yeah. So, and then you're basically trying to figure out how you can both get to Xerox and rescue him. So you're making your way through your house. You're trying to avoid this deer cat thing. You're learning about the world and the deer cat, which is a Lucis or something like that, which is a parental animal to these aliens, and there's no parents there. They're all hatched from these what's a bug hatch out of?
It's like an egg, a larva
thing, whatever it's called.
Yeah,
I want to say catalyst. That's not the word. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like a cocoon.
Thank you, cocoon.
Yeah.
And they're raised. There's no adults there. After a certain age, they get sent off to the Troubles. I'm not sure what that is. Sounds like a some sort of adult trials thing. So it's just them and these Lucis, these animals. And Joey is confused by the presence of this thing. She thinks it's a monster that's going to attack her, so she's constantly trying to avoid it. So I kind of found the second act was it was decent enough, and the puzzles got harder, and I really enjoyed playing as Zephyros. I thought his house was really cool, and all this painting is like, oh man, I should frame my pictures like how that
it was cool. Yeah, the separate style of like seeing both places and kind of seeing it's they really did a good job of showing like the background of a character to explain. I find in a lot of ways,
verbal,
exactly, the visuals really explain the characters and their background just by seeing what's going on. Like,
he's so clean
that they're in a band together, and he's got a couple cherished things. He's big into his kind of like sports. His sports and his and his singing and everything. He's got the auto-tune mic that his best friend made for him, so it's like, damn, you got all these like really cool things. It's like this, and it's like he really likes to keep everything very clean and tidy, and you know, tinkers with telekinesis. So it's a cool million to bent see,
spoons
like, so it's like it's really cool to see that like background development
and explore it.
Exactly. It was they did a really good job of that. I really, and like it all looked really cool seeing like the way that the pictures were set up, and you see this like developing, just seeing how they kind of do their thing day to day.
Yeah, it does make you feel like you're landing in the middle of a story, but like at a good point you can catch on and join into. I really like that you could jump between the two characters at any point during the story as well. So before the portal transfers, you can jump between either running around in the house as Joey or running around the treehouse as Jude. And then on the second part of it, you can jump between Joey and Zephyroth.
Yeah.
Xerox. And the story kind of concludes with you rescuing him. You make your way across after you get this hoverboard, which Dammit had borrowed from Xerox some time ago and then basically kept. You find it in the house, you make good with the deer cat, and then you all together make it across and save him. And that, then you run your way out of town as it kind of zooms out to the Harris, which is kind of the backstory we didn't describe too much so far, but she's like the leader of the kingdom there that's kind of raining hellfire for reasons.
Yeah.
But altogether, I really enjoyed it. Trying to think of anything we kind of missed there. The animation's fantastic, I think. It's not like overkill. Well, not to say overkill. It's not like Cuphead level, but I don't think it needs or wants or tries to be that. It's really good for...
Yeah, I think it's more reminiscent of like the kind of jumpier 90s animated like point and click look.
Yeah, it's really... And it looks charming. And there's a lot of subtle emotion that they capture in characters and whatnot that's nice. The music's really good. I like the little cutscenes they do when you're kind of getting places in the game and you progress.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts on the game?
Pretty cool.
I look forward to future episodic releases.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Act Two. I'm having known how well Homestuck develops and it just keeps getting better and better. I'm excited for this one because they kind of set the ground. And this one, they like, I like it when something endears, like a story or a movie or a game, endears me to a character quite quickly. I'm like, that's a feat, because usually I'm really picky about that, and you can usually see through it. Like, so many movies are terrible at that. You're like, I saw the whole movie, I didn't care about them at all the whole time, or just like I could see they were trying really hard. Like, so many Marvel movies, like, they're fun to watch, but like,
you talking shit on Peter Parker?
Some Peter Parkers.
Oh, okay, Andrew Garfield stung. All right.
Yeah, I thought the first Amazing Spider-Man was all right.
Yeah,
I thought it was all right, but it was very boring on rewatch.
I could see that.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant Spider-Man with this discussion. What's his face? The first before
Tobey Maguire. Yeah.
Number two.
Those are hard to rewatch.
It's not hard to rewatch the second
Spider-Man
one.
Spider-Man 2 is like, so good, though.
Yeah, it is. Because it's like watching Evil Dead.
Yeah.
It is.
That's true.
Anyway, totally off topic. We'd love to hear your thoughts about Hiveswap as well if you happen to play it. I definitely encourage you to do so. I think this, I'm having a hard time describing that second act. I found it really charming, especially because Xerox, the chats were a bit long toothed for sure. Yeah. But like it's really unique moment to moment, and the backgrounds and the rooms are really nice, and it's short and sweet, but feels like you got a lot out of it.
Yeah. It has that. Yeah. The vibe, like what Tacoma had.
Yeah.
Where it has that vibe of there's such a visceral and just all encompassing background.
Yeah. It's like 2D Tacoma
to the world. Yeah, And that, I totally dig that. I'm all about that.
Yeah.
So it's like, if they can keep that up
yeah.
and kind of pull together, like kind of tighten up a bit of the dialogue a yeah. bit, not to a crazy degree. I feel like it's still got to feel natural, you know?
Yeah.
But I think just yeah. just a little bit, just tighten up a little bit.
Take off like a keep 90 seconds of each of yeah, those the fully developed
background world. Away. And that'll be, it'll be great. That's all I could ask for in a sequel.
Yeah.
And, or in a continuation.
It was like $7 or $9 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's like $8. This is all good.
Yeah, it's worth the money.
It's a good price.
Yeah. So yeah, kudos to them for pulling that off. It was very long in development. It's been like, I don't know, 5 years or something since their Kickstarter yeah. Came out, and people were kind of disappointed that you know, it's so long, and it was promised for 2013 or something ridiculous. So
yeah, this worries me about the upcoming acts.
I mentioned fair. In the last episode, I think they know how to make the sausage now. So it's more
true.
Just
that's
like,
true. They have the core aspect now.
It's like starting something like, you know, start a, but this is not an equal parallel by any means, but start a podcast series. It's the first episode. You're kind of cobbling a lot of things together. But the second one is super easy.
Yeah, super easy.
Second one, you don't care
it's
anymore.
It's like Spider-Man. The first one, you're kind of cobbling care. Along. It's not yeah. so great. And then by the second one, you got yourself a hit.
Exactly.
And then by the Unless third amazing, one, you got a Spider-Man. Real stinker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't wait for Act 4. So we'd love to hear your feedback. You can always send it through to us on Twitter at IndieComplete or on MonsterVine.com. Just check out for the IndieComplete Episode 9 post. Or surprise us, post about comments in Episode 2. And we won't see them.
Yeah.
But Francesca also streams the game. I don't think she had a chance on this one. She streams a lot of her development of games as well. I think she was working on some interesting games this month. And for next month, I think, Jamie, you were excited about this next game. You were hinted at to the audience, or you're hinting at the audience. Actually, I don't even know if you were, but you talked about it earlier.
Yeah.
Oh,
Mario Golf on Game Boy
yeah,
Color.
I was, yeah, very excited. We're going to be playing Mario Golf for 3DS, the Game Boy Color emulation.
Oh, my God.
Although, legit, pretty close. I would be all about that. But, yeah.
If you guys ever want to do a sideshow. Yeah.
But, yeah, we're going to be playing Golf Story on the Switch.
Yeah, our first Nintendo Switch Ooh. Game on Indie Complete. Episode yeah. 10.
First Ooh. Sports game. Ish.
Yeah, I think so. I can't even remember all the games we've done now.
You guys don't remember when we did FIFA 16? Yeah.
You don't remember Madden 87?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the big one.
Yeah.
I don't remember those ones.
Those don't kick.
That doesn't remind me.
Ring a bell.
Okay, so Sword Sorcery, Jotun, Night in the Woods.
Madden 87.
Hyper Light Drifter. What was episode 5?
Yeah.
Little Nightmares. Perception, Tacoma, Stardew Valley, and whatever we just talked about now, Hive Swap. Wow,
it's building up. It's feel like you're just reading back through this. I'm like, oh, we've come a ways here.
Yeah,
It's been almost a year.
That's a great question. I'll just pull back up my phone again.
That's 10 episodes, Whoa. Right? We've been doing
February
13th. Here. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's been a while, huh?
Yeah. Thanks for That's still listening. If you're still time. There.
Dang.
Thanks for still listening.
We don't blame you if you're
yeah,
not.
Right. I'm so sorry.
But I am excited for next month because I haven't played a game in full on the Switch before.
Yeah.
So I'll have to get on that.
You tinkered with Snake Pass a bit, right?
No.
Oh.
No. I played it at PAX and then you did the review.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So, yeah, on MonsterVine.com, actually.
That's right.
MonsterVine.com.
Yeah, I forget what I gave it. I think it was a 4.
It was pretty fun.
It was
game.
A good game. It's yeah. a real solid game.
Yeah.
All the charm of Banjo Kazooie and all the music of Donkey Kong, because it's
and
the same
the
guy who did the Donkey Kong soundtracks.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
Actually, it was just one snake.
Great title.
But back to it's Golf Story.
Golf Story, yeah.
It's by Sidebar Games. Yeah. And I grabbed a description from Nintendo.com just to give you a bit more inside baseball.
Wait, from Nintendogs.com?
Close.
Nintendogs.org.
Yeah,
here's the description.
Baseball yeah. and cats.com.
Oddly enough, they knew all about Golf Story. Golf Story combines the sheer excitement of golf with a serious story that plays out over 8 different courses. Play the story of a golfer who is forced to give up all that he holds dear for one last shot at accomplishing his dreams. But all is not so simple in the world of golf. To best today's players, you have to be able to keep up with them both on and off the course. And in terms of key features, you can tee up anywhere. You'll be surprised how many problems can be solved by hitting a golf ball at them. Explore 8 unique environments, each with their own courses, challenges, people, and secrets, and play through a dramatic story with a diverse cast of characters.
You can also raise Labradors.
What?
Nintendo.
Oh. Nintendo's. Yeah, for a second, I'm like, wait, really? I'm like, oh, like, okay.
This is
next level right here.
Spoilers.
Tough crowd. Ooh.
Oh. Thanks so much for joining me, Jamie and Spencer. We'll see everybody next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Peace.
choo-choo.